What's going on, guys, and welcome to episode 13 of the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. Got an awesome guest on this episode with Elizabeth Uhler. She's actually out of Germany. She is a strength conditioning coach and worked in high-level rugby, but also was a high-level talent ID, worked in German weightlifting for their Olympic training center. Really cool interview up here. We talk about a lot of cool things as far as, you know, long-term athletic development, how we're coaching kids, and how we should be really sticking with technique a lot longer when we teach our kids, and how we can set them up for later if we don't try to rush that process. We also talk a lot about the social aspect of coaching and how doing something like keeping our kids and making it fun doesn't just mean playing games, right? How making it fun doesn't just mean making it all soft and participation trophy and nobody wins or loses. We talk about the approach of how the art of coaching can really be about, we can still find a way to win, but we can really get kids to want to belong to a community. I think this is a really strong episode. I really enjoyed it. Tune in and listen to it here, and I hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by SimplyFaster.com, the industry's leading sports technology and coach education platform. Check out all their products and their coaching blog at SimplyFaster. That's SimplyFaster.com. Today, I'm hanging out with German strength and conditioning coach, Elizabeth Uhler.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach, Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on. The takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
Elizabeth, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Man, I'm glad to have you on. I know it's weird being, this is my first person I've talked to overseas, right? So the first time I've ever done that. So appreciate you taking the time. She's 7 hours ahead. It's local time here is 10:22. What's the time for you now? It's like 5 o'clock or something. 5:22. Yeah. So it's almost dinner time for you, right? So Interesting enough there. Well, glad to have you on. I appreciate you coming on to the show and taking time, you know, taking precious time out of your day to sit and talk with me.
No, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Good deal. One of the ways that I found you is on Twitter, right? Twitter is kind of the universe of coaches being able to meet, at least it hasn't on for my sake. And I've just shown the way that you've been able to teach Olympic weightlifting has really impressed me. So that's one thing that I see and how you make youth athletes really be able to move super well. Like that is super impressive. But tell us a little bit about your journey, Elizabeth, about how you became a coach and your upbringing. I know this is going to be different. You know, most of my listeners are in the U.S., so they're going to hear a little bit upbringing of how life's a little bit different over in Europe. So let's hear a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. I don't know where to start, actually. I think like many, especially strength and conditioning coaches, I was an untalented athlete before. Yeah. So a lot of like coaches get into coaching because they sucked as an athlete. like I was the same. I competed in weightlifting for a couple of years. I was like a very late starter. I've been an extremely physical, active kid in general. So it was very, very easy to learn the Olympic lifts for me in the beginning of my 20s. Then I competed in Olympic weightlifting for a couple of years on national level. I won a few medals on national championships, but like, that's not so important to me because like I never really made the step to be good on international stage. I was just never strong enough.
There's still something to be said about that though. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, but yeah, that was the reality. And yeah, I started actually, like, when I was still at university, I started coaching kids for fun. We had a good situation here in Germany a couple of years ago, where we had a huge lack of PE teachers in schools, especially primary schools. And they said, instead of scrapping the PE lessons, we are going to ask coaches in different sports clubs to basically, like, come in and as a volunteer coach and take over, like, PE lessons. Then we said, okay, we don't do that as volunteers, so at least get us some money. And then they started, like, the actually it was the Ministry of Education in the state that I'm living in that said, okay, we're gonna fund that whole thing. So if sports coaches, and I was like a weightlifting coach, if sports coaches wanna take over PE lessons in schools, then we pay you for that. And that's how I got into a great program with I was working together with a gymnastics coach and a swimming coach, and we delivered I did 1 hour every week. Like, there wasn't much, but for one class. And mm-hmm. then I had several classes on a day that we offered. We basically replaced PE teachers. And how I got into coaching young athletes or very young athletes. And then I don't know what happened, but it was, German weightlifting got really interested in what I was doing. I got asked if I want to, like, they had a job, they had a position as the manager of the youth department of the NGB. And I've been in law school. Like, I was a law student before.
Oh, wow.
Before.
Okay.
Coaching. Yeah. I skipped law school to become a coach. Hey. No, probably a lot of people are going to say that's so stupid,
nah.
But, especially from a financial perspective. But yeah, I followed what I was passionate about. And I got that position as manager of the youth department of German weightlifting. And I developed a framework on how to teach Olympic lifts to kids. And I try to implement that in all the weightlifting clubs and especially also schools that were interested in Germany. So it was like a nationwide project. Then, of course, a lot of schools were very skeptical. They didn't really do. They didn't really trust it. They didn't really believe in that whole idea of implementing strength training in PE. So
sounds familiar over here in the U.S., I promise.
I tried my best, and I think I have like a couple of schools all over the country that are doing strength training now. I have implemented it in their curriculums. And then after 2 years, the high performance department of German weightlifting offered me a position as a national coach and head of talent identification. And I took that on because that was my step into high performance sport, basically. That's what I did. The job at German Weightlifting, and that's like, I'm pretty open about that. Like, I had a lot of, because I had a six day working week. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of compensation in vacation for that. And I used my whole vacation time. I think I had around 40 paid vacation days, per year. I used this to work in strength and conditioning and do internships and all of that. I coached the under 16 rugby team and an under 18 rugby team as a strength and conditioning coach. And I did a couple of internships during my paid vacation. And now I'm like, end of 2020, I left that role because officially the Olympic cycle ended, even though we didn't have the Olympics,
right.
2020, but I got like an Olympic cycle contract. So my contract ended, and then I decided because of that international, the international problems we have in weightlifting, I decided I want to try to transition completely to strength and conditioning, not do it on the side. And yeah, that's what's happening the last 6 months. I'm actually not really working in strength and conditioning at the moment, but like in athletic development, I work currently, I'm a consultant for the sports ministry in Luxembourg. Like whoever Googles Luxembourg now, it's like an extremely small country in the, in the middle of Europe. It's extremely small. We are trying to implement like LTAD. I don't really like saying LTAD because like I don't believe completely in that whole LTAD model.
Okay. But yeah, we can dive into that.
Are we going to dive into that later?
Yeah. But,
like, we are trying to do better coaches and PE teachers education in the country. And I work in a governmental funded project as a consultant. So basically I tell them how coaches education should be better in like several sports. Yeah. At the moment I'm with the National Soccer and the National Basketball Federation. And we're trying to, try to improve the coach's education there.
Yeah, awesome. Man, that's a lot.
A lot of people think I'm so young when they see my videos, but I'm not as young as people think.
Well, that's great. I mean, your experience is so vast, and there's a lot of things we could unpack just right there. I'm just rolling through my brain of all the things we could talk about. But the first thing I want to talk about is your experience with seeing, all right, so you were working with German weightlifting and talent ID and like the sports model in Europe and how it's so different than the US. Like we, in my mind, and we talked a little bit about this off air of like how sports specialization is so like, it's the norm over there in some ways, right? Like, and then how over here at the US, we talk about, we want to blame sports specialization for injuries and problems and burnout and stuff like that. Well, let's talk about the differences and maybe just your experiences and what you've seen athletes growing up in things like this. And then the trends you see in the US, and then why do we have it wrong here? In your opinion?
I wouldn't say everything is like, there are a lot of things in the US that I like think are great and that I wish we had here in Europe or in Germany, for example. I think the first thing what people always have to understand is we don't have school sports. Like we don't have high school sport. We don't have college sport. That's not a thing here. So
it's a huge revenue driver. College sport's a massive revenue driver in the US, right? So there's a difference there to look at.
It doesn't exist here. And everything basically, like the whole sports system is based on a volunteer club system. And only we have like we have pro leagues in soccer, obviously. That's what we are probably the most known for. We have professional basketball leagues or handball leagues like that. They do exist. Not as big, of course, as in the US, but they do exist. I think a lot of college players from the US, especially in basketball, that don't make it to the NBA or they don't really see a future. They come here. We have a lot of Americans playing basketball here for like, of course, like a normal salary. Not as big as or not can't compare it to the US. We do have pro leagues here, but the majority, like the sports system is based on volunteer clubs. Okay. And it's like volunteer clubs in the specific sport. We do have some multi-sport clubs where kids could sign up and then maybe try different sports, but like that's not the norm. It doesn't really happen here. So usually kids sign up for a club, sign up for a sport, and then they do that sport. And that's considered early specialization in the majority or especially in the US, that would be considered early specialization because they sign up for one sport and play one sport the whole year.
So is it normal for a kid to like, I don't know, like when they're young, right? Because a lot of times, especially you look in the US, you look at my son's two, and everybody thinks, oh, you're going to put him in T-ball, basketball, soccer, flag football, like you do the whole nine. So you give them all the options. So it sounds to me like I'm just echoing you here to make sure I hear you right. that usually kids pick a sport and then boom, that's it. Like they pick the club, right? They pick the club because that's what they're going to do. And they're just going to commit to that, right? Do you often see kids pick a club and go, oh man, I'm going to try another one? Or is there not as much options, you know, to play different clubs depending on what's available in the area, maybe depending on area and geographical, you know, things like that? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, like a lot of kids change sports, like, and some of them might even play two sports. Okay. And then they, most of the time they play, two sports that are completely opposite. Like there's no, I don't think there's anyone that does like an approach of like, oh, I'm going to send my kids now to wrestling, track and field and football because I want him to become a football player.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist here. I had a couple of rugby players, for example, that one rugby kid that he came to rugby practice three times a week and then he played tennis once a week. Something that was like completely the opposite, but would be helpful for rugby maybe as well. But this whole multi-sport approach that doesn't really exist here. Like also that kind of thinking doesn't really exist in Germany.
Yeah.
And when we look at how elite sport or high performance sport works, it's early specialization because we put kids into the Olympic training centers at a very like, or what people would say is a very early age.
Like what? Like what's an age that's pretty typical for that?
It depends on the sport, but for example, in weightlifting, we have the majority of the girls come at the age of like 14, 13, 14. The boys come like 14, 15. If you look at swimming, for example, they are already in the Olympic training centers and in boarding schools at age of 11 or 12. That does exist. Usually after, like in the early specialization sport, like, or early peak, let's call it early peak sports. Mm-hmm. They are in the Olympic training centers pretty early. And in the later peak age, for example, weightlifting is like at 28, mm-hmm. they come back at 14, 15. And then how the Olympic training centers work here is basically, you have the sports coaches that offer like the whole training is implemented into the kids' everyday life then, and they all go to school. So for example, we have at the Olympic Training Center where I worked, or what was close to where I worked for gym weightlifting, there was a class. We had like three swimmers, three boxers, two weightlifters, three gymnasts, and like they all go to one class together, and then they have training times at a certain time of their schedule, and that's then when they go to their sport, and then they practice their sport. We rarely have athletes that do multiple sports after, like at the age of 13, 14, 15. That's where you decide, where you got to decide.
Okay.
How you got to go.
You know, how is that funded? Like whenever, like you have kids that go to these Olympic, you know, whatever it is, these training centers, and then they go into this full day of where everything's scheduled, it's structured, school, training, you know, eating, nutrition, boarding, like where they live, like do parents send them off? Like, is it local? Like, I want to know, like, how are they, like, cause in the US you'll have parents look at that and go, how in the world I'm going to afford that? You know, like how does that work over in Germany?
No, that's complete. Like that's governmental funded.
Okay.
Of course it's a system, that the Olympic trainings. So the Olympic training centers, I mean, all coaches are financed by governmental, like that's public money. Gotcha. So even my position, a German weightlifting that I had, that was public funded. The Olympic sports, basically all the Olympics or all sports that are part of the Olympics, they are completely funded by the government.
Gotcha.
And when we have kids that go to those boarding schools, if you have kids that they usually ask the parents, how much they earn, and then it's dependent, like they pay, like if they can pay, they pay something.
Yeah.
If they can't, there is like usually someone covering that for
like a sponsorship or a scholarship type deal. Okay.
It's not officially a scholarship, but it's usually it's usually covered then by the Olympic Training Center.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, that's really interesting. You know, and this is a really interesting segue to go into mentioning early specialization, because we've talked about it. In the US, we blame early specialization a lot of times on what's causing injury and burnout, right? And to me, I think that's a red herring. Like, I think that that's not fair. You look across the entire, you know, spectrum of the world and how athletes and athletics is played or sport or whatever, that early specialization is a thing, period, right? There's a lot of people that want to be elite. You're going to have to specialize at some point because you only have so many hours in the day. And that's not fair to blame that. And I'm in this boat, and I've been advocating from this from day one, that early specialization isn't the problem. It's bad periodization and bad planning and bad coaching, right? Would you agree? I want to hear like what you're seeing it from an outsider's perspective in the U.S., like from Germany, looking in the U.S. going, why are we blaming it on early specialization? You know, because like, and then you can give me some examples on how, even though you're early specializing over there, how you're doing it the right way, and then and how you're avoiding injury and burnout.
Yeah. Now, first of all, I think early specialization happens here because of also the funding system that we have, because it's basically taxpayers' money that goes into promoting the Olympic sports. What they do in soccer, that like if we want to talk like soccer, for example, that's a complete different world because that's like that's the driving. It's a business. Olympic sports are not a business. So,
gotcha. Okay.
It's taxpayers' money. So, they try, of course, and that's the intention. They try to select talented athletes at an early age and then focus the resources that we have on those athletes. Mm-hmm. If everything is working well here in Germany, I doubt that. Like, there are a lot of holes in the system as well, like especially when it comes to selection and actual talent identification. But at the end of the day, it's like we have a very limited talent pool compared to the US as well. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we don't have sports in college and in school, we got to find a way. And like, it's just early specialization is just a way that works here because of the system that we're in. And if we look, for example, at how sports funding here in general works, then also at the later stage, for example, when they're like 18, 19, or when they done with school, If you have like the potential to go to the Olympics, for example, then you become either part of the police or part of the military, and mm-hmm. then they pay your salary.
Okay.
Because you're representing the country. We call it here in Germany, we call it sports soldiers. So they are part of the, like the majority, you will see that maybe if you're watching the Olympics the next few weeks, you will see mm-hmm. that German athletes sometimes have like the military symbols on their kit. And mm-hmm. is always a sign for they are representing the country and they're part of the military and they're doing that as part of the military. So this is how sports funding here works. And of course, because it's like public funded, they just want to have those that have potential to go to the Olympics.
Right.
That if you are,
you don't want to tell a lot of parents that in the U.S. In the U.S., it's like, oh, my kid's not the next LeBron James. You're out of your mind. Yeah, he is. You know, that's.
that's not, and that has been like one of the hardest things at my former job and talent, like even in weightlifting, and also seeing how others do it and that had the same position. You got to be very honest to people about the potential of their child. And it's like, I wasn't a likable person probably. Because I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, your kid is great. You have a great. And I've always been in that situation. Like, you have a great kid, and he's doing well. Like, he's really doing well. But like, look at what compared. Compare your kid to the what's happening in like Romania or in Russia or even in the US. You gotta compete with these kids at this age, and it's not gonna, there's not enough potential for your kid to make it to the Olympics. And
that's a dagger to the heart sometimes, but that's good. You know, like being honest with kids gotta be tough, right?
It's very tough. Like, sometimes it's also for me, it was like, I sometimes in the evening I was laying in my bed and was like, maybe you should give that kid a chance. But at the other hand, like, you sacrifice so much for that sport. Is it really worth it? You're also taking a lot out of a kid in that Olympic path. Like, if it wants to go the Olympic pathway, and if you're not sure the kid makes it, is it not, from an ethical perspective, is it not better to say no, it's not enough, and rather give that child his life back? And not pursue that dream.
Right.
But I think it's very, I think a lot of parents and also coaches, I don't just say it's just parents, but it's a lot of coaches that have no clue what it might take or what it takes to develop an athlete to actually that level.
Yeah.
And my job at German Weightlifting, that was the only goal. Our main funder, the government, they even said, we're not interested in European championships. It's cool when you win a world championship, but at the same time, I said, you got to perform at the Olympics. And my job, for example, even in talent identification, and I was with young athletes, like with student athletes, my job was also dependent on how the Olympic athletes perform, or the athletes that participate at the Olympics, because that's our only goal. Like, that's right. What the agreement always between the NGBs and the funder, like,
you gotta win, man. Results matter.
we had in German weightlifting was like one, like at least one medal for the men, and at least this amount of participants at the Olympics, and at least three top eight, positions.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And also my life is dependent, like my position was dependent on that.
Yeah.
So, it's very tough, to explain also to other coaches that their athlete might not be the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I always said, I can, the majority of kids, like, you take a lot of their time away by making them wrong, or like by keeping hopes up, and like by selling them. Like, I really don't like coaches that selling young athletes a dream that they actually can't achieve, or selling their dream for. Because like you take away so much from that child if it does go that way and it's not successful, and you got to think if that's worth it.
Yeah, that's on another grand scheme, but I can relate that to an American sport where, you know, you really sell these kids on American scholarship or college football scholarship or baseball, basketball scholarship, when in reality you're like, no, like, You might not be, and it, like, my head coach says this quite often for our high school football team, that it's okay to be a really good high school player. Like, it's okay. Like, it's really good to work really hard and be good at this level and get the lessons out of it that's going to make you a better person and take you on to life. And then when it's over, it's good and you move on to the next thing, you know, because eventually it's over for all of us. You know, I got lucky enough to play ball at the college level for 4 years, and then it was over for me. I didn't get to play professionally, you know, and I wasn't good enough, like, just straight up. You know, when you're not good enough, it is what it is. And it's funny how hearing it from the European side or the German side of, you know, Olympic selection and stuff, that those hard conversations have to happen. And a lot of times it depends on your job, right? Because if it doesn't pan out, I mean, can they trust you, you know, to do your job, right?
Yeah. I think it's also, and that's something I want to, like, that's what I want to coaches or also parents to understand, is like, making kids' wrong hopes for like a sports career is taking away a lot of opportunities to find other passions or other hobbies, or having developing a good social life, whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm honestly, I don't want to tell the kid that I know is not, that's not going to be super successful. I don't want to tell that kid to, for example, skip grandmother's birthday for going on a competition or play a game or whatever, when I know like that sacrifice is not worth, it's not going to play out in the long term. And you're taking making these wrong, like selling this dream and mm-hmm. making wrong hopes. I think like a lot of a lot of coaches take a lot away from kids as well.
Yeah.
And also a lot of fun, like actually playing the game, because playing and not being that successful, or not going into the right path is, that's very frustrating for kids too. And then we leave them alone, or a lot of coaches leave them alone when they don't make it.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of young athletes drop out at a late, like here at, it's the same here in Germany though. A lot of young athletes drop out at the age of 18 or 19 and don't make it. Like they, like that's an age where you can, you kind of know in a lot of sports if they have the potential or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are like completely, they have like no clue what they're going to do, because it's such a big part of their life.
Yeah, their ID, like their identity is just completely wrapped in that sport, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they haven't developed, they a lot of chances to develop other interests and other hobbies got taken away.
Yeah.
So this is what you should be aware of, and where you should be honest. Yeah. Like,
that's a big deal. I want to segue a little bit into more like some X's and O's on weightlifting, because man, watching the videos just from Twitter and things I've seen, like you really, I mean, at least from the US standpoint or strength coaches standpoint, at least, you know, I'm in the high school level, like have no idea how to teach it, you know, and I'm still learning how to teach it, right? There's some things I'm not very good at. I use the clean quite substantially. I don't use the snatch at all, basically, because I don't feel like I can teach it well enough, or I don't know if it's the bang for our buck is high and what we're training for. What in your, you know, from your experience or your opinion of how you're viewing coaches using weightlifting for like sports performance? Because you're kind of segueing, right? Like you coach weightlifting, you were in weightlifting in a capacity at one point, but now you've done strength conditioning, right? You've done strength conditioning for rugby. You're in that. You've been in both places, and I think this is important for people to hear. Where does weightlifting have a place in sports performance, and where does it not? You know, I want to hear your opinion on it, and then let's discuss that a little bit, because I have my own opinion on it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people, because of my background, and I used to be a weightlifter. I worked for German weightlifting. I worked in that elite environment in weightlifting. A lot of people think I'm like this hardcore only weightlifting girl.
Die, like no other methods work ever.
Yeah, so they think I'm like this super supporter of it when it comes to the when it comes to strength and conditioning. I'm actually not. Like I always say, like weightlifting is an Olympic sport for a reason. Right. It's an Olympic sport. It takes a lot of time to learn those techniques properly. And whoever tells you he can teach someone a clean, like a proper clean that has benefits in 10 minutes is like, that's like, that's not learning. You can, that athlete hasn't really learned it. He can maybe perform that movement, but it's not really, he hasn't really learned it. So,
okay.
I've worked with rugby players. I haven't done any Olympic lifts with them.
Really?
I think pull variations were the max, like clean pulls were probably like, that was the closest to weightlifting I've done with them.
Okay.
Even on like even on an elite level, I do off season or preseason programs with some players from the pro leagues in France. I think the whole off season we haven't done an Olympic lift at all. I don't think it's, if they haven't learned it as kids, or if they haven't learned it at an early stage, it's not really worth it to teach it later. Like, I'm not going to spend that time.
Tell me why, though. So, like, what people think they're getting out of the clean, yeah, right? Especially in the U.S. They think, you know, violent triple extension, you know, I can give you my reasons why I use it. So I'll just kind of give you my perspective first, because I don't use a snatch, I use the clean. One, because I agree with you, I don't know, I don't have the time first off to teach two things, even though they're similar, they're different. Like, there's no chance I'm gonna give, I would have to dedicate all my time to those two things, because one, it's a sport in itself. I told my kids that, guys, this lift, people dedicate their lives to do this one thing, don't expect to be elite at it, because it's okay not to be, right? Two, I use the clean because I think that, one, it humbles a lot of kids, because you can't just muscle it up. And a lot of kids are not naturally, like almost every kid's not naturally good at it. They have to be taught it. And the next thing is coordination, right? Just being able to time things properly, feel their body in space, and knowing when to hit the gas, right? When to change direction, when to brace, things like that. That, I think that translates some, right? But as far as like just pure power output, and like for training for sport, that's kind of like, that's down the list for me. You know, I think it's more of a coordination lift and a confidence builder, because the kids have to literally commit their time to learning it, commit to a process, right? Like, I've got to commit to taking the time, because this is not going to be easy. Those type of mental trend or attributes are what translate to sport to me. But I can see where a lot of coaches, like, for example, I worked in high level SEC football at Mississippi State as a volunteer in the beginning of my coaching career. I didn't do any Olympic lifting, period, to prepare for high level college football. Still a lot of programs out there don't. And then there's this huge feud, right? Of like, oh, like clean's the king or whatever. And I'm like, wow, where did you get that from? You know, like, I don't understand that. So talk me through why you choose not to use, like it sounds to me like you just stay away from it.
Nah, I don't completely stay away from it. I stay away from it for athletes that don't really like that have no chance of really learning it or having a benefit or taking a benefit out of it. That's what I would say. For example, now in the last off season, I had a pro rugby player who's playing in France. He weighs around 120 kilograms. That would be like
250, 260 pounds imperial, something like that. Yeah.
Around 260 pounds. Like, had a lot of injuries before, elbow, shoulder. You make that decision to not clean because you don't want to take that risk, and you don't have that goal of increasing coordination, all that, what you do and like doing athletic development, for example, that is not the case for that specific player.
Right.
He just to get powerful and strong during off, like, or maintain sometimes. We were building so power and strong during off season. So that's where you choose something where you get like adaptations, much easier, and without having that kind of risk, what you have, for example, with a clean. Or,
can you dive into what the approach, what, give me some examples of how you approach that?
Like, trap bar. We did a lot of trap bar jumps. I'm a huge fan because it worked for the rugby players that I've worked with so far. I do a lot of explosive jumping and then squatting, stuff like that, or trap bar and then jumping afterwards, or it depends on the players.
Sure.
I do use Olympic. I've taught the Olympic lifts to all under 16 players that I've worked with, because a lot of them were actually still they were very late developers in the teams that I had. So it was not really when you have like late developers where you don't really have testosterone that much yet, you have time. You have enough time to teach them technique because you don't need to think about, you don't need to put so much time on building at that stage.
Right.
Because you like, I'm very like, I start building or I start hypertrophy when they hit PhD. That's when I actually with young athletes where I start really increasing, the volume. Before that, I mainly teach techniques. So with my under 16 rugby team, I've taught them the Olympic lifts, all of them.
So hold on. I'm gonna cut you off because this is super important. I want people to hear this. You just made a massive point. Like we've got to hit this. You just mentioned like I teach technique because before they hit puberty or before they hit the age where they really start to mature and their you know, their hormone starts to take off. And you mentioned an age, you were like under 16, 15. And I was like, whoa, you know how many people and coaches in the US are like trying to drive output with 12-year-olds?
Like, yeah, I know.
That doesn't make any sense, right?
Of time, I can't. In Germany, we can't swear.
I mean,
we can't. But like, I'm sorry. It's a waste of time. Yeah. It's such a waste of time. And like, especially with 12-year-olds or 11-year-olds or 10-year-olds, you don't need to like you just teach them technique. Do really quality reps over and over that they really learn those technique. Like they benefit from that much more. You don't need to do a progression in regards to weight or whatever. Like I always had to laugh when I got weightlifting kids like at the age of 12, and then they had like they got a training program from their coach, and it was like, first set 23 kilogram snatch, then second set 24 kilogram snatch, and then 25. What does that do? Like, and the kids don't care anyway. The kids also don't really care. Just do like, then do 20 kilograms and do like tons of good quality reps.
So you're going to set them up for the future, right?
Yes. That's our part before puberty. This is teach technique. Like anything else is like, it's a waste of time. Teach them everything they need. Like teach them a clean, teach them lunges, teach them whatever. I had the same with girl. Like that's even more important for me personally because, I had a lot of, like, I had a lot of girls at like the age of 15 or 16, they were not, and they were light and they were not able to do a chin up or a pull up or could do like two or three push ups, but they
wanted to. That's rampant here in the US. If a 15-year-old can bust out two or three pull ups in my class, it's elite in where I'm at. And that's sad, you know?
Yeah, it's sad. It is. And like that stuff you can teach. Yeah, that's stuff you can spend time on with 12-year-olds, like teach them and especially girls, teach them pull-ups, rope climbs, whatever. Like they got to that you don't need to do like a squat progression or even whatever, a clean progression and like add 1 kilogram per week. That's not worth it. Yeah. I've seen so much coaches doing that, but it's not.
You know,
worth
I'm going
to
shout out one of my favorite coaches. Her name's Missy Mitchell McBeth. You may follow her on Twitter, but she's a female, one of the top female coaches in the country, in my opinion, in strength conditioning. And I heard her speak at our national conference in Minnesota, and she says this all the time. And I don't know if she'll credit herself for saying this. It's maybe somebody else said it, but they say that long term consistency beats part time intensity.
Yeah.
Right. So trying to. And it's hard to convince these American coaches, and I'm American, but American sport coaches that if we really lock in on the long-term goal, because we talked about it earlier, long LTAD, right? Because I've seen it with a couple, because now I'm going on year four at this high school, and I've finally seen a freshman, a 14-year-old, turn into an 18-year-old, right? So focused on, I was like, the first 2 years in grade 9, grade 10 here, before they really start to hit that puberty, like if we could just get hundreds and thousands of reps of quality, when they hit that area, you're no longer worried about what's going to happen when you want to actually get physiological and muscular adaptation, right? And soft tissue adaptation. Like, you can't do that early, because then you screw up the coordination, you screw up the motor patterns, like you're screwing up everything that actually you may be building on top of dysfunction that's going to create injury. And the thing that blows my mind is that this is not even their sport.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing a different, that this is not the show. This is the supplement, man. Like, there's a reason why. I just blows my mind, you know, about how, why you think it's wrong to, why coaches think they have to hit some number that's automatically going to make them a better athlete. Because often I think if you do that, you're making them a worse athlete.
Yeah. That's why, like, I don't celebrate PRs, for example, of 13 or 14 year olds or 15 year olds, because that's like, it's not, or even younger. There are some weightlifting kids out there at the age of 12 and they're repping out PRs every week. Like, that's normal, but it's not, like, I don't think that's something to celebrate. And it's not, I don't think it means something to kids anyway. It's not an achievement to do 1 kilogram more. Most of the time they don't really understand what they're doing there. Mm-hmm. So, or what a PR means, like, right. Just something that we taught them as adults, that this is something great.
Yeah. It's a great point.
If we would teach them, well, that's what I at least try to teach my kids or the younger kids, that that we do, like, technically good lifts that that I approve, or someone else approves, that this is actually the cool PR. That in the long term, that's much better, because, like, at the end of the day, what my job, it's not really my job, but I don't coach kids for a living, but I coach a lot of kids, so. My job is to prepare those kids for S&C coaches on the high school or then later the college level, so right. That they have, like, the biggest toolbox available. Mm-hmm. And I want to send my kids to later then to a strength coach that doesn't have to explain what a power clean is anymore. Doesn't have to explain that you need triple extension. And because the kids already know those movements. And all this strength coach has to do is, like, then loading and doing a good progression.
Yep.
Because especially during puberty, I don't want to spend my time teaching technique.
Yeah.
When could actually chase valuable adaptations.
Okay.
I think Michael Boyle commented, like, tweeted that the other day, like, puberty is legal doping. It's,
yep,
like, where 100%. You have testosterone, where you have the testosterone, and that's where you want to have all those adaptations, and that's where you want to do big jumps. Like, you want to, like, we had weightlifting kids at the age of, like, I could see the boys when they were, like, when they hit PHV and we were doing tons of volume and actually chasing those adaptations, they made jumps of, like, 20 to 30 kilograms in one lift over a year.
Yeah.
What, like, quite impressive,
right.
But that should be normal. And you can only do that when you have built a technique foundation before.
Man, that's why that's such a good point. I love that. 'Cause another thing, coaches, you want to see your kids hit big numbers. If you want to see your kids make big strides in their development in lean muscle mass, if you focus on their technique for 2 years as a youngin, guess what? You have the chance to do it now. Like, you can do it, because honestly, if they suck at the lift, they're not going to hit their leverages right. They're not going to create enough tension on the muscle. They're not going to be able to withstand or have the capacity to train at a volume or at a capacity to be able to actually, you know, stress the body enough to actually adapt from. A lot of coaches are like, oh, recovery is everything. Well, first off, you need something to recover from. Like, if you don't train hard enough to recover, your recovery doesn't matter if you're not training hard enough in the first place. But if you're not training well enough, it's hard to train hard. It's really hard to train. You know, you can't train hard if you don't train well. I really don't think you can, right? Because then it's like spinning your wheels. Like, oh, I feel like I'm doing a lot of stuff, but I'm not really. Right. And that's when we can get into, like, you see a lot of people exercising, not training. Like, you're just trying to get tired. Like, that's a big problem in high school sports in training, that a lot of coaches think that the level of fatigue is going to measure of effectiveness. You know, that's not true, right? Not always. Now, is fatigue a byproduct sometimes of training? Yeah, you better believe it. Like, it's part of it. But as far as the model here in the U.S., especially for at least high school coaches that I see, that's where we have to understand. Like, we have to play the long game with these kids. Now, you get a kid that, all right, here's the big kicker in the United States, as far as like, because it's easy for us to, let me compare high school football to rugby, because I think you can at least see some parallels. Like, we get a kid that comes in, is 16, 17 years old, really skilled, or even basketball, because I'm a huge hoops fan.
Yeah.
Really skilled, very underdeveloped. And then coaches try to rush this training, right? This physiological adaptation, like, quickly. Yeah. Like, even though they're already at this age, but their technique's not there. So how do we approach that, right? Is it still smart to just stick with technique, even though they're really highly skilled, you know, at that age? Or, like you and I say, do we just try to pick? This is what I would do. You get a kid at that age who's that skilled and so underdeveloped, then you got to pick some low skill movements that you can get adaptations from and not get them hurt. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Like, I don't want to, like, I've experienced it in rugby, especially with the under 16 boys that I had. They are all now are now 18, 19. The kids that really were consistent in learning the technique, they had such a huge advantage when they were like 17, 18, mm-hmm. and like, you know, the peak, like some of them had like the peak of puberty. They had intense, like they had big progressions, and they had like, they did so much better than the kids that didn't really want to learn the techniques earlier, like went on under 16 level, mm-hmm. and then they only started later learning them. And then it was like that whole mix of, we got to combine technique with adaptations, whatever. And it was like, nothing was really done well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, letting 100 kilogram, 18-year-old rugby player, 100 is maybe a bit much, like there would be, or 200-pound, rugby player, letting him do, cleans with, I don't know, 75 pounds to learn the technique.
Right.
You don't really learn technique, and you don't really have any adaptations. It's such a waste of time. But it's like, I don't want to deal with that on that level anymore. That's why I got into like coaching techniques to kids early and teaching them as much as like as many different ones as I can. Like even though a lot of, like, they will probably never, the majority of them will never need a split jerk, any, like, they don't, will not need it, but they're able to do it. So, and they will probably, they have like these, the coordination, and they learn, the toolbox is so big. And I think it's also for a strength coach later, it's much more fun if you get an athlete that is actually, you ask him, can you do a full clean? Can you do a bar clean? And he says, yes, mm-hmm. I've done like the last 5-6 years. I learned it as a kid. It's much more fun to work with athletes than those where you're sitting sometimes in front of your computer and was like, and thinking like, okay, he doesn't have the mobility for this. He can't do this. He had like this. Okay, let me find something that's not going to hurt him, where we get adaptations out of it. Sometimes like that's not fun as a strength coach.
No.
But if you have that kid that can do everything, that's cool. So this is why I think a lot of strength coaches should maybe spend some time coaching, teaching techniques to kids, and then maybe see the benefit later.
Yeah, and for sure.
See like what long-term effect it has.
Yeah, so, I completely agree. You know, I firmly believe that my time here as a high school strength coach, because I was a college strength coach in the beginning, and now I mean, here being here at the high school level, being able to teach 13 and 14 year olds, because that's like, we start in the middle school here, and we have a very progressive way of doing things. We've set it up very nicely. I'm very, very fortunate to have an administration, a president, a principal, an athletic director that believes in what we do. So setting it up to where, like, when eighth graders come, they don't come to me till eighth grade just because of, you know, the way our school's set up and spacing and ratios of coach and everything. But every eighth grader will come through my, will come through my weight room and spend an entire year with me.
Yeah.
Like an entire year, and then start super slow. Like, and then ninth grade, they have to take my class as a freshman, as a, in grade nine, everybody does. And then after that, some kids choose, okay, because in the States, as far as PE goes, in from grades 9 through 12, you only need, at least in Alabama, in the state that I'm at, you only need one high school credit of PE to graduate. That's it. One.
Yeah.
That's it, first off. But so a lot of kids will go, okay, I'll get my high school credit. And in PE at my high school, now I'm at a private high school. I'm not in public education. Remember, I'm in private education. So we write our own rules, kind of. But we everything is based off movement patterns and strength and conditioning. It's not, you know what I'm saying? So it's not just because in public school, a lot of times the athletic periods are either like a regular PE, and often it's horrible. And like they let them, they just send them to the track to walk, and PE coaches look to not do anything. That might not be the case everywhere, but I see it pretty often. And then they have athletics PE where the sport coaches are running their workouts, or they start their sport practice. But anyway, what I like to see here, you know, our kids get to ninth grade. They do 2 years with me, which is all based off movement patterns and learning. And then at grade 10 is when we decide, I'm noticing a pattern here. They're starting to decide, all right, am I going to pursue this to be a varsity competitor? You know, varsity in the U.S. being a high school competitor, or I'm not, right? And then we can decide from there. And I try to survey my kids early and like, what do you want out of this? Right. Do you want fun, or do you, are you looking to be for it to help you in sport? And that helps me a lot, you know, to ask kids those questions. And I wish coaches would ask their kids more questions and get to know them and how to make things more fun instead of just trying to pigeonhole them into what they think they should be rather than asking them what they want to be. Right. And then figuring out how you can help them develop their own identity rather than create one for them. Cause honestly, I personally was that kid, Elizabeth. And it wasn't even anybody's fault. I think it was my own. I thought, you know, I was a three sport athlete, then ended up specializing, and I was a football and baseball athlete later in my high school career, and then went baseball. And the whole time I thought, I'm doing this to be a pro. I had no idea. And then once I hung up the cleats and I was transitioning into coaching, I had a hard time for about 3 months dealing with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm done with sport. I've been doing this for 20 years of my life, and now it's gone, and that's it. Like, what do I get from it? You know, and I think a lot of coaches have to be better. And I'm not blaming coaches. I think this was on me. I think I had plenty of good coaches in my life to help me try to see that. And I was just stubborn as a donkey, like really trying to figure out, you know, like, man, you're not as good as you think you are, dude. You're not an MLB pitcher, man.
Yeah, I think I've said that before, and it's something that, but this is also like, it's very common still, even also in the strength and conditioning community, you also sports coaches, this hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. I don't believe that. I don't think that really happens. Like, the talented athletes I know definitely way, way, way more lazy, talented athletes that still made it.
Yeah.
Compared to very, very hardworking athletes that were not that talented.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think that's something that I really don't like coaches selling to young athletes, because in the majority of cases, it's not true.
Yeah.
You can't, it's especially in the sports that I've worked in so far, that I've been in so far, is you got it. Like, talent is like the foundation. If you have holes there, if you have, like, especially in your physical abilities, if there are any holes, you can't make up for that with you can't fill them up with hard work. It just doesn't, like, it's so competitive on elite level. They're genetic, like, even especially in weightlifting, besides the doping part, big doping problem that exists, but these are genetically freaks.
Yeah.
So to reach that, to achieve that, you need to be like that as well. I saw a lot of, at the Olympic Training Center, you see all the other athletes, either if it's swimming or if it's like, volleyball or what else did we have? Boxing, like these were most of them were physically, they were different. They were built different. And like to tell a kid that hard work can, you can outwork those lack of physical abilities, that's just lying. It's lying. Yeah. Either lying or it's like you have no clue about what elite sport is.
Yeah.
And I think that's especially in maybe also in strength and conditioning, that's an issue. Like that a lot of sports coaches, and not sports coaches, but strength and conditioning coaches maybe don't know what it takes to be elite, or have not seen it, or have like a wrong impression on what it means to be elite. That's why it was so important for me personally to do these internships and or even just shadowing in elite environments. I spend a day with the national gymnastics team here in Germany. Like that opened my eyes.
I bet. So
like in regard what hard work actually means and what it takes to be, and they are not even compared to US gymnasts, they're not even that great. Like we have like they're going to the Olympics and stuff, but they're not fighting for medals. And like I think a lot of coaches have like a very wrong view on what it takes to be elite, and that's also why they fail in preparing players or athletes for that.
I try to tell my kids the same thing, that like, and even our coaches, and some coaches really get it, some coaches really don't, guys, can I drag you to the most elite college football program in Alabama? Like, they're not far from us. Like, can we go watch a practice and you watch those absolute behemoths of humans move the way they do? And you tell me, oh, I'm this and I'm that. But then you switch the narrative and go, okay, we realize what elite is. You might not be that in that area. That doesn't mean you can't be an elite human being, right? That doesn't mean you can't use this to your advantage to be a better person, right? Yeah. To find other passions, right? Be well-rounded. Go find something. Like, don't, it's okay, even though you may really love weightlifting, you really love rugby, you really love football, and you worked really hard. And we talk about this, like, all right, if you completely fulfilled your genetic potential and you worked really hard and it took you where it took you, some people it takes you to being a starter on the varsity team and that's it. Some people it may take you to play college football or make a college football team. Some people it takes you to be a pro. We need to teach our kids that that's okay. As long as you gave everything you had towards something and did everything you could to try to maximize your potential, can we be happy with that? Like, can us as adults celebrate that and not be like, oh, you weren't good enough because you didn't get a D1 scholarship? That really, really bothers me when I see that happen. It happens a lot here in the US.
Yeah, it bothers me, or what bothers me the most is when these athletes or these young athletes, when they then drop out of sport in general or physical activity and like don't do anything of that sport anymore. Like I've seen that a couple of times here at the Olympic Training Center, that like athletes they missed like the opportunity to like go to the next level, or an international career wasn't achievable for them, and they never wanted to have anything to do with the sport anymore. Wow. Like I've seen swimmers that like did one girl, I think she has never been in a pool since she dropped out.
Oh, again. Goodness.
And then you think like, did that kid really ever enjoy doing the sport? And that's what you question. And you're like, did that kid really enjoy doing that sport when she was young? Like, and that's something like where we have to change something, because I think the worst is you make sport so you don't make it enjoyable for them. If you don't make it enjoyable for them afterwards or playing it for fun, then you're doing something wrong. Like if a kid drops out and leaves the sport completely because it didn't make it on like college or like D1 level, right, or whatever, then we did definitely something wrong. Also, even in regards to maybe coaching, or transitioning athletes to coaching. I don't know. Like, this is something that bothers me a lot about dropouts and about, like, it must have been miserable, so miserable the whole time before. You say, oh, I would never want to see a pool again.
You know, you talked about, you know, it's not the kids, it's bad coaches that cause issues a lot of times. But let's think about human psychology, in my opinion, and experiences and how that drives how we behave. Where these athletes that experience these same things we just talked about, right? They maybe they had a bad experience, or they only have a certain perspective. They have a very zoomed in lens of what they think is excellent or what they missed out on, and then they become a coach. And they're just going to project those same things onto these kids and fill this narrative, right? And sell that false dream, right? And do all that. So there's this vicious cycle where the only way we fix it is just if those of you that are coaching, just be different, stand out, right? And there's a hard balance. Look, there's an art to this. I get it. Of making sure that we're competitive, because at the end of the day, coaches here, if you don't win, you talked about it at the Olympics, if you don't win, it's hard to have a job. You're not going to be here. So one, you got to win, but how do you make it enjoyable for these kids? Because, you know, that's the interesting thing about here in high school sports in America is that we want to make it about winning, and we want to win. At the same time, you want it to be an enjoyable process for our high school kids. That's a hard balance, man. Some people can't balance. They're just all about business, 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 win, win, win. If you're not with it, you're gone. It's transactional. You're just a cog in the business wheel. And then other people are making it, oh, it's just participation trophy, and we're going to make everybody feel good, and there's no winners and losers. It can't be either one of those. You know, it's got to be a great coaches know how to mix that well. You know, great coaches know how to make people want to be a part of something and be a part of something bigger than themselves. Because I think that athletes, once they're a part of a community, because that's a lot of times what a team is, in my opinion, they don't remember the stats. They remember the memories. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look at, I think I've done an article about that, about what fun actually means for Simply Faster.
We'll link that in the show notes. We'll link that up to this. So take a look at that.
It's like, I asked myself that question in the beginning when I thought, like, do I really want to, like, can lifting weights actually be fun for kids? Like, is that something they can enjoy? And I found, like, there's really good research. There's really good research her name is Amanda Wiesek. She tries to find out what fun actually means for kids.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's something completely different than what we expect. So not playing games is not always fun. Like if you make some relay race with like 8 or 10 year olds and like let them compete, and you're a coach that yells at everyone after that didn't hit a certain time or whatever, then that's also not fun.
Right.
Like, so it's like, I think when we talk about what is actually fun for young athletes, and doesn't matter if it's the weight room or the sport, I think we need to have like a way more holistic approach. And it is a lot more about positive coaching. It's a lot about team dynamics. It's a lot about like these kids have like a belonging, like they feel like they belong to this community, to the sport, to this team. Like that's fun for them. Mm-hmm. Learning something new is fun for them. I think like I had a kid once, and she was like, she went to a CrossFit gym with her mother, like when their kid was 10. And then she said, oh, there were these people doing like with their toes on like the bar where we normally pull up, and she wants to do that as well because it looks so cool. And I was like, okay, practice it, like I don't care, like practice that. And then she showed me, and she was so excited, and she like, that was, it was She practiced that for a couple of weeks, and then she showed me that she could do five. And she just came back to practice that because she thought it looks cool. And I was like, if kids come back for stuff like that, that's fun for them. Yeah. And you don't have to overthink. A lot of times, like, coaches show this super cool drill on social media and like. And then they write, oh, because of the design of the drill, that's automatically fun because you have some competitiveness in it. If you make it, you can make the coolest drill pretty shitty for athletes if you don't coach it right. So just because you bring competitiveness and relays and races into your practice doesn't mean it's automatically fun. And like, I think that's what a lot of coaches where coaches have to think about is like, a lot is about you and how you approach those sessions. It doesn't matter if strength and conditioning or your sport. It's like, it's your attitude. It's how you communicate with those kids. And like, don't be like, I'm not a fan of like this whole talking top down, also not to young athletes. I've coached under 18 boys. That's usually a very difficult age. Yep. You don't get far with telling them all the time what they should do and shouldn't do. And you have these rules and you have punishments and pushups. That's not how it works most of the time with them. And if you have like a good connection, a good relationship with them, if they feel like they're opening up to you, and I think that's one of like, that has been one of my best coaching moments ever. When some of the players were under 18, so they were 16, 17, when some players asked me if I can recommend a Valentine's gift for their first girlfriend, that was like one of my best coaching moments ever. Yeah. Because I thought if like a 17-year-old boy asks you if you have a recommendation for a Valentine's gift for their first girlfriend, they trust you. Yeah. Then you know they trust you. They trust you with their life, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
that's super, super. Because
if they miss on that gift, it's going to be just devastating, right?
And I was like, okay, they trust you with their life right now. So you can't disappoint them. And it shows that they take you serious at the same time and they respect you. Otherwise, they wouldn't talk about such things. And this is why players come back and not because you make some fancy drill and some cool, I don't know, exercises that you've seen on YouTube or whatever. So it's a lot more about the social side of it. That's something like that's very important for me always to say, like, fun is not just playing games or making fun drills. It's about you and how you communicate with the athletes.
That's so powerful. I hope everybody listens to this because it's so true. And everybody's a little bit different, right? Everybody's going to communicate that a little bit different. Don't try to be somebody you're not, right? Just be you. And I genuinely care. That's the thing. You know, you got to really care because kids see through your crap. They see through your fakeness. You know, if you really care, that's what it's about. And it's just not about us as coaches. It's about us serving, you know, and I really think if you have a servant heart at the end of the day and you're really in it for the kids, they're going to see that, you know, and then learning to, and I get it. We got to learn these strategies to be better communicators. I'm constantly trying to become a better communicator. You know, I'm married. I better be a good communicator. Like that's a big deal. You know, with me and my wife. So that's another interesting topic on its own. But Elizabeth, man, we've been rolling for almost an hour and 15 minutes. I know we could probably, I say this with every guest, cause I think all of my guests are awesome. You know, we could talk and I think we can have more conversation later about other things, but I thought this episode was phenomenal. And I just appreciate you taking the time out to speak to me.
Yeah. Thank you.
So if anybody wants to reach out to you, maybe they hear this episode and want to talk to you a little more or reach out to you or see more about what you have to offer and the content you create, where can they find you?
Twitter. I do have an Instagram. I'm not really active. Like I'm active on Instagram, but not that much as compared to Twitter. I have a website. At the moment I do, like I have time at the moment to do, like if people want to learn weightlifting techniques or talk about that, I'm pretty open for that. Everything is on my website. That's how you find me.
Okay, good deal. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your time, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.